A skycatcher is down in Kansas. United Airlines sees its fuel hedges backfire. And could airlines see record profits in 2009? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, September 19th, 2008. We regret to report that a Cessna Skycatcher, confirmed by the company to be the non-conforming prototype, crashed yesterday near Douglas, Kansas. The pilot parachuted from the plane and escaped with minor injuries. Cessna said the plane had logged 150 hours and was on a routine test flight. KAKE-TV News quoted witnesses who said they saw sparks coming from the plane before the pilot ejected. There's no word yet on any impact on the production schedule for the plane, which has a current waiting list of over 1,000 depositors. Check back with us on the web for updates at aero-news.net. Southwest Airlines has been respected for years for its shrewd hedging of fuel costs, but you have to know what you're doing. The Associated Press reports United Airlines is on track to lose $544 million on fuel contracts that date back to the third quarter of 2003. Those advance purchases would have saved United money when oil was at $147 a barrel earlier this year. But now that oil's back below 100, they don't look so good. The good news is that lower current prices are softening the blow. But J.P. Morgan analyst Jamie Baker still expects United to lose as much as $2.30 a share in the third quarter, more than twice earlier consensus estimates. Airlines have seen their stock prices pounded lately and have been cutting back capacity and introducing a host of new fees on travelers on the premise it was required to meet skyrocketing fuel costs. Now that oil has dropped down below $100, what happens next? One analyst says the industry could produce record operating profits next year. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram cites a report from Jamie Baker of J.P. Morgan suggesting jet fuel prices may be lower in 2009. And along with cuts in airline capacity of about 6% and revenue from all those new fees, could allow strong airline profits. Quote, while far from assured, the potential for record 2009 profits is likely to strike many by surprise. We figured we might as well be the first to point out the math, unquote. Well, it appears others may be doing the math as well. After an ugly day on the stock markets Wednesday, airline stocks were mixed at yesterday's close. A pleasant surprise was United, which led gainers with a 3% climb for the day, despite Wednesday's announcement it'll write off $225 million to cover fuel hedges, which are now more expensive than current prices. The Lone Star Flight Museum's B-25 and B-17 will be touching down in Midland, Texas today for what looks to be a long-term stay at the headquarters of the Commemorative Air Force. Hurricane Ike caused heavy damage to the Lone Star Flight Museum in Galveston. Officials say the hangars and Texas Aviation Hall of Fame saw 7 to 8 feet of water. The entire contents of the gift shop are reported lost, and every exhibit in the Hall of Fame was destroyed, although an undetermined number of artifacts may yet be salvaged. All airplanes kept at the facility through the storm are reported to have sustained major water damage. Fortunately, 10 vintage aircraft were evacuated before the storm. Among them, the B-17 and B-25. They're arriving at their temporary home in Midland just in time to become surprise attractions at a planned weekend air show there. Donations to help restore the Lone Star Museum will be accepted. We're sad to report the loss of 7 soldiers in the crash of a U.S. Army CH-47 Chinook in Iraq yesterday. The Associated Press reports the Chinook went down just after midnight, about 60 miles from Basra. The helicopter was part of a 4-ship convoy flying from Kuwait to Balad Air Base north of Baghdad. The accident is the deadliest U.S. helicopter mishap in over a year. Military officials have no word yet on a cause, except to say that hostile fire has been ruled out. British soldiers in control of the Basra region quickly secured the accident site, and an investigation is underway. Names of the victims had not been released as of late last night. Up next on ANN, a U.S. Air Force official says Boeing's tanker cost too much. The CSAR-X helicopter contract may also be delayed. And NASCAR settles a lawsuit from a pilot's widow. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 19th. I'm Paul Plagg. Observers of the U.S. Air Force tanker procurement controversy have some actual data to chew on for a change. John Young, Air Force Undersecretary for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, told the Washington Post Wednesday that Boeing's bid for the first 68 aerial tankers was $15.4 billion, almost $3 billion more than Northrop Grumman's bid. Boeing wanted more money despite the fact its KC-767 was smaller, would have taken longer to deliver, and had slower offload rates than Northrop's KC-30A. Young commented, quote, "A member of the American public might conclude that Boeing sought to charge more than the Defense Department reasonably expected," unquote. The price discrepancy may reflect high development costs for Boeing, or a sacrifice by Northrop's partner, Eads, to gain a foothold in the U.S. defense market. Young has also told the Wall Street Journal the procurement process is in desperate need of simplification. He notes the Air Force initially had 37 key criteria for KCX, but another 800 less important factors. Quote, "Having that many tradable requirements creates a fertile field for protest issues. Frankly, the circumstances and course of events are rewarding bad behavior, which cannot become the norm for defense acquisition," unquote. Both Boeing and Northrop say they look forward to the next round of bidding in January after a new administration takes office. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates canceled the current bidding competition to allow a cooling-off period following charges of irregularities in the Air Force's management of the process. There's now word that the Defense Department may also delay awarding a contract for a new combat search and rescue helicopter. The Air Force was scheduled to determine a winner in the CSAR-X competition this fall, but Young tells the Wall Street Journal that decision may now be deferred till 2009, for fear the losing bidders would be able to successfully protest the deal. As ANN reported, the Air Force named Boeing's HH-47, a variant of the Chinook, as the winner of CSAR-X back in November of 2006. Losing bidders Sikorsky and Lockheed Martin immediately filed protests. After bickering with the Government Accountability Office, the Air Force agreed to modify its request for proposal again last November. Lockheed is offering a variant of the Augusta Westland-sourced three-engined US-101. Sikorsky wants to sell the Air Force its HH-92. Both companies say their choices are more efficient than the twin-rotor HH-47, which some industry observers say is just too big for the mission. Young says his team is poring over the RFP to make sure there are no issues that could be contested later. Quote, "If we can assure that we believe the government has done its work properly and should prevail in a protest, I think that award will be made," unquote. If not, the next U.S. president's in-bin is piling ever higher. A Florida newspaper has published what it claims are confidential details of the settlement of a lawsuit against NASCAR related to the crash of the organization's Cessna 310R in Florida on July 10th of last year. NASCAR employee and pilot Michael Klemm died along with Dr. Bruce Kennedy, the husband of International Speedway Corp. President Lisa France Kennedy. The crash came after Klemm reported smoke in the cockpit and attempted an emergency landing at Sanford Orlando International Airport. The plane had been on a short hop from Daytona Beach to Lakeland. Klemm and Kennedy didn't make it. They were on approach when the plane reportedly veered right, hit a tree, then struck two homes in a subdivision called the Preserve at Lake Monroe. There were two severely burned residents and three additional fatalities on the ground. Attorney Eric Latinsky represented the pilot's widow, Wendy Klemm, and the couple's three sons in a lawsuit seeking, in Latinsky's words, quote, "to make sure the Klemm children could continue their education and be taken care of. In light of losing Michael at such a young age, how would the sons be able to attend college in the future?" Unquote. The Daytona Beach News Journal reports it reviewed court documents indicating the three sons were already ages 18, 21, and 23. The paper said its reporter also saw a handwritten note which read, quote, "wrongful death claim approved," unquote, and an indication that the settlement amount was $2.4 million, all of this coming a week before the case file was sealed. Latinsky declined to confirm the report, citing confidentiality. NASCAR officials were quoted as being unaware of settlement details. An electrical problem with the plane's radar system and a burning smell in the cockpit had been reported a day before the crash. The NTSB has not yet issued its report on probable cause for the accident. NASCAR, however, has issued its own 23-page report discounting the probability that the radar system issue played a role. Letinsky says that while the settlement ends any further litigation against NASCAR by the Clem family, there still could be lawsuits against manufacturers of parts on the accident plane. The Allied Pilots Association, which represents 12,000 American Airlines pilots, asked the federal government Wednesday to defer approving American Airlines' application for antitrust exemption to allow for a full examination of related national security, competitiveness, and outsourcing issues. American, British Airways, Iberia, Finnair, and Royal Jordanian want to form an alliance which will allow collaboration on routes, fares, marketing, and loyalty programs. American also announced it had reached a joint business agreement with British Airways and Iberia. Union President Captain Lloyd Hill is telling lawmakers, quote, APA has major job security concerns relative to what American Airlines is attempting to do, while other interested parties have voiced meaningful opposition to reduced competition among carriers. There simply isn't time for the federal government to conduct an appropriately thorough investigation in a matter of weeks, as American Airlines management has advocated, unquote. Hill also pointed to the role U.S. airlines play in carrying troops and supplies in wartime as the nation's Civil Reserve Air Fleet. Quote, APA questions the wisdom of permitting national strategic interest companies, such as airlines, to engage in what amounts to a virtual merger with foreign counterparts, unquote. In a letter this week to the CEOs of British Airways and Iberia, Hill questioned the competence of American's leadership. He claims pilot staffing levels at American have fallen below a specific contractual benchmark, allowing the union to block the company from utilizing commuter air carriers. Hill adds there's no provision in American's contract with the union to allow the airline to proceed with the joint business agreement. Still ahead, Sturgill says we need more airports. A Proton M rocket launch is delayed another day. And the TSA rolls out biometric security screening for airline crews. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, September 19th. I'm Paul Plack. The mother of all NIMBY battles may be brewing in Chicago. The Associated Press reports acting FAA Administrator Robert Sturgill says the nation may need as many as four new major commercial airports over the next 20 to 30 years to accommodate growth in both general and commercial aviation. He says its central Midwest location makes the Windy City a prime candidate for its third airport, even after a $15 billion expansion program at O'Hare International is complete. New York and Atlanta are also mentioned as possibilities. But Sturgill admits getting new commercial airports built is tough. Atlanta's recent expansion project fought NIMBYs, environmental challenges, and other local resistance for more than a decade before a fifth runway finally opened in 2006. Sturgill admits, quote, it takes a lot of local political will to move new runways at airports forward, unquote. You know, I have to ask, aren't there sparsely populated areas or blighted urban areas that would love to have new development, jobs, and commerce all funded by the FAA? Why do we keep pestering cities where residents don't want more airports? International Launch Services is going to try again today at 5:48 p.m. Eastern to launch a Proton M rocket in Russia. The launch has been postponed twice, most recently yesterday, when engineers found they needed to replace a faulty avionics unit. The booster is set to carry the Telsat Nimiq 4 satellite into orbit. The company's last satellite launch was March 15th at the Baikonur Cosmodrome, when the shutdown of the Breeze-M upper stage 2 minutes early put the AMC-14 satellite in an orbit lower than planned. It was the third failure in as many years for the Proton-M and the second in 6 months. But the news hasn't been all bad. In August, a Proton-M successfully launched the Inmarsat 4F3, one of the biggest commercial satellites ever built. In February, ILS successfully launched the Thor 5 satellite. On Wednesday, a Southwest Airlines pilot was the first aircrew member to be screened by the Transportation Security Administration using an advanced biometric screening system. SecureScreen was jointly developed by the Southwest Airlines Pilots Association, the airline, the Coalition of Airline Pilots Associations, Maryland Aviation Authority, officials from TSA, and Priva Technologies, the developer of ClearedKey, the core technology platform used in the system. The test is happening at Baltimore Washington International Airport, where over 200 Southwest pilots will participate in the 60-day trial. SecureScreen is a step in implementing the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, which were later given the force of law by Congress, requiring TSA to properly identify authorized airline flight deck and cabin crew members at screening checkpoints, granting them expedited access. And finally, if you've rolled your eyes when airlines have implied that checked bag surcharges would be reevaluated when fuel prices dropped, you may be surprised to hear one airline is actually rolling the charges back now. Air Canada announced yesterday that in response to decreasing fuel prices, it will eliminate all second checked bag charges implemented in the spring. Executive VP Ben Smith adds, quote, "Further, Air Canada is making its pricing more transparent by removing add-on fuel surcharges for flights within North America and instead adjusting its base fares to cover the total cost of fuel," unquote. Effective September 23rd, Air Canada will eliminate the $25 fee for second checked bags that was introduced on May 15th. It becomes the first major North American carrier to do so. You know, back when United Airlines became the first to start the checked bag fee trend in the spring, other airlines piled on so fast you'd think they were being herded by a sheepdog. For some reason, I'm not really expecting a stampede back in the other direction. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear U.S. Department of Transportation Inspector General Calvin Scovell present his report on the Eclipse type certification controversy to the House Aviation Subcommittee. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.